newcastlechurch.org. This is Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, part two of a discussion on building a theological library. Join a conversation already in progress. What about history? What's next?
Church history?
Yeah.
Church history, you've got, if you're wanting a real general, basic, one-volume history, Bruce Shelley's Church History in Plain Language is worth reading. That's an overview of, all of church history after the Bible up to I think it was updated in the 80s or 90s. When I read it, it was through the 1970s. Pelican's The Christian Tradition is also helpful. That's a five-volume set. If you're interested in a really good volume on the Reformation, the Armand McCulloch's book, The Reformation, is very readable and very learned. Now, he's not a believer, but it's a worthwhile book to read.
I'm sorry, I missed the name of that volume?
The McCulloch's The Reformation.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's just called The Reformation.
Right.
That's, I believe, a Penguin title. Viking books?
Viking or – well, Viking is a –
The same company, yeah. Then there's John McNeill's The History and Character of Calvinism. And a book that came out about the same time as McCulloch's The Reformation is the Christ Church is Purely Reformed. Now, Benedict is a Jew and not a Christian, but he writes a very good volume on the Reformed Church in Europe, primarily. A very fine book. Probably the standard on American religious history is still Sidney Ahlstrom's The Religious History of the American People.
Yeah, that's a big tome.
Yeah, a very big tome. And that it can be augmented by Mark Knoll's recent volume, America's God.
Yeah.
Both of those are big. And both of them are in paperback as well. And again, we're just barely touching the skating on the surface of the ice now.
Yeah, but if you pick those up and you want to get more into theology, you can talk to others, look at the bibliographies, and really start to spider web your way out there.
Yeah, most of these books will have good bibliographies, so I mean you can do that.
Oh yeah.
Again, the last two books are limited to America, to the U.S.
There are other countries. It's my ethnocentrism.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You're so Westocentric.
Yeah, I know.
Well, actually, now that you mention it, there is a book on the history of the church or history of Christianity in the world that the Westminster Seminary Bookstore used to sell. I'm assuming they still do. I think it's got the title of like World Christianity. And one of the benefits of Mark Knoll's work is that he did a book on the history of Christianity in North America, one of the first to actually include Canada in his study. That's back 14, 15 years ago. That, you remember that book, gentlemen?
I haven't read it myself.
That Mark Knoll wrote?
History also, An interesting something I haven't delved into yet, but which is an interesting study in itself as we're talking about other countries, would be a history of Christianity in Africa. There's a couple of new volumes that have come out recently on that particular issue. And to expand our horizons, beyond the development of Christianity in America would be how the church has grown and developed in Africa, because they're now a big player in the bigger, broader Christian world.
Absolutely. There's one book by Edwin Yamauchi, I believe, The Bible and Africa, or something along that line. That's going to be the more historic. And then Thomas Oden, a Wesleyan Methodist theologian, has just come out with, or is just about to come out with, a book on Africa, Christianity in Africa. Now, what he's doing is tracing out the fact that we can trace some of our roots in the Christian faith back to Africa.
Like Augustine?
That's an InterVarsity publication, I believe. Now, if you're wanting to deal with more contemporary issues, there's the author Philip Jenkins. Anyone familiar with that name?
Yeah, I've heard it, yeah.
Nope.
He's written on The Next Christendom.
Oh, yeah. That's an Oxford title, isn't it?
And it's actually, there's two other companion volumes.
Yes, yeah. I've seen
one on the use of the Bible in South America, I think.
Yep.
Or in the third world, two-thirds world. And there's also a new volume on Islam in Europe. So he's from the University of Pennsylvania right here in Philadelphia. He's worth reading.
Hmm.
Yes, we want to remember that the Christian faith was not invented in America.
No.
Even though it's had a major impact in the past and even at present, it's not an American. While we're on that topic, there's a book that came out called Americanism. Came out relatively recently by David Galernter, who's a professor of computer science at Yale.
Oh, Dr. Truman was mentioning this guy.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's not a long book. It's not a big book, so the interested layperson would benefit from it. The thesis basically is that Americanism is the fourth major religion of the Western world. And he tries to argue that that Americanism, the view that America has a special role in God's providence of the world, that it is a legitimate development of biblical and Puritan theology.
Just a note, the White Horse Inn mentioned a little bit of this topic.
Yeah,
if I could pull it up fairly recently.
It's actually quite helpful in understanding how Americanism gets intertwined with conservative Christianity.
Yeah, they were talked about this. They had an episode entitled Political Temptation. It was back on January 27th, the White Horse Inn. It was a really interesting discussion, and they brought up a number of points.
Well, what it does for me, it should sensitize the reader to the potential, if not actual, idolatry of Americanism.
Hmm.
Now, I'm a conservative politically and theologically, but I was really sensitized to that problem. I think all three of us here would recognize that America is not God's chosen nation, right?
No, it's an importation. It's some appropriation of Zionism.
What you have going on, there are drawbacks to Galernter's book. He's not a theologian and he's not a church historian.
Hey, but us computer scientists, we certainly know an awful lot about an awful lot of subjects, though, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a very readable book. But those of us who are trained in theology and church history will discover what I would call some overgeneralizations. But what the central thesis that he makes, of course, I agree with, but I don't agree with the side he comes down on.
I see.
Galernter himself likes Americanism. Right? He approves of it.
Interesting.
I love my country, but America is not God's chosen nation. But what he does is he traces that back of what I would call a national messianic consciousness.
Wow.
Messianic sense of America saving the world. Mm. But that actually goes back to the Puritans when they planted colonies in America, especially that oft-quoted expression, the city on a hill, quoting from Matthew.
Exactly.
That now, what happens is, and I can track, I can actually trace this out in the American religion historiography. They've traced this, that what was understood by the Puritans, let's do this. The Puritans didn't have a church state separation, okay? That comes later. So when they talked about establishing communities to the glory of God, they were talking in what we now call establishmentarian categories. But the truth of the matter is, that was an illegitimate move from the beginning. Because the promises of the Old Testament, and this is where Gelernter's description of Americanism as a form of Zionism, comes from the fact that the people, the Puritans, because they didn't have a church-state separation, and this was true of Christendom in Europe, okay, so this is not unique to America, they took the promises in the Old Testament that apply to the Old Testament people of God and now apply to the church. Because they didn't have the church-state separation, those promises that are fulfilled in the church now are applied to the nation, in our case, America. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that's a very helpful summary.
So that's what happened. That's the gist of that. That's an interesting book. And I only raise that because of our concern to not be so Western-centric or American-centric.
Now, has he written a response to Voss's volume? Has he written a book entitled The Self-Disclosure of America?
Well, that's kind of what this book is.
I understand. Well, you mentioned messianic consciousness. Does America
were
the chosen
nation? The actual term that I should have used was messianic. What's the not consciousness? The idea that you have to save everybody.
Complex.
A messianic complex. Thank you.
There
complex
you
is the word, not consciousness.
Well, what do we have briefly in the realm of theology, particularly like systematics?
I'm glad you asked that question, Kevin. This list is not complete, and you may have things that and suggest them as you will. Okay.
Sure.
One place to start for a person who wants to understand Reformed theology, and I believe this book actually has a new title, so we may have to, it's R.C. Sproul's Grace Unknown.
He retitled that?
Yes, I believe, isn't it now, that was originally a Baker title. For some reason, I'm thinking it's now a P&R title, but with a different title.
I wonder about that, because they have their own.
I think they took what was the subtitle in the original publication.
Oh, the
and
Heart
made
of Reformed
title.
Theology.
What's that?
I know he's done new commentaries on the Confession, the Westminster Confession. Truths We Confess, those are useful.
Yes,
for
that,
this
that would be correct, the three volumes.
Yes.
Of course, there's still the one volume commentary by G.I. Williamson.
Yeah.
That's been updated, right, Jim? Recently?
I'm not sure. I'm still on the Grace Unknown issue here.
Yeah, I didn't know that's been republished.
If you look on I think you'll find that book has been retitled, and it's called something like An Introduction to Reformed Theology.
I think it's called What is Reformed Theology?
Yeah, that's
the one. That's the same book.
Are you sure that's that? Because that's an audio series they had prior.
Well, all of his books are based on audio series, Camden.
Okay.
So yeah, that's it. What is Reformed Theology, Understanding the Basics?
I didn't know that was the same as Grace Unknown.
I believe that's the same book retitled. Who's the publisher of that one?
That is a P&R title, I believe.
That's right. They were able to get the rights to that book.
So they must have got them prior to Reformation Trust existing.
Right.
I see.
Well, that's right. Okay. Well, there's
okay.
also,
yeah.
well, I mentioned here David Hagopian's Back to Basics. That's a P&R title. Cornelius Van Til's An Introduction to Systematic Theology.
That's not for your layperson.
No, that's, well, I wouldn't want to scare them away, but let's call it an advanced title. Okay.
Yeah.
It has been reissued with a newly typeset with an introduction and
some annotations,
explanatory notes by Bill Edgar, a professor at Westminster Seminary here in Philadelphia. That's the edition that I would recommend people get. It's called the second edition.
It's from P&R, and it looks like the Christian Apologetics that he edited in 03, so it'll fit on your shelf.
It's got that, what is it, a Paisley design or something on it?
Yeah, yeah. It's nice.
Then there's, and really that is more to do with prolegomena. That's the technical term we use.
Yeah, you're not going to get in there. I mean, the title might be misleading to some people because you're not going to get in there and open it and find your traditional systematics textbook like a Burkhardt.
Right, you're not going to find a section on, you know, the Ordo Salutis.
No, but you are going to find, yeah, prolegomena, Doctrine of Scripture.
Doctrine of God.
Doctrine
yeah.
of God. So
if I would also, if I could throw in just to supplement the good titles already mentioned, would be R.C. Sproul's The Essentials of the Christian Faith, which I found to be a helpful layman's guide to systematic theology.
That's a Tyndale publication, is it, Jim?
That's correct.
With the green cover, I think.
The green cover, and that was the one that I cut my teeth on. And then there's another CBD has available Louis Burkhoff's Systematic Theology for $12.99.
I'm
sorry. I didn't know you were going there.
Which,
I'm sorry.
Which publication is that?
Is that the edition, Jim, that has the intro to systematic there as well?
It does.
Is it the Erdmans?
Okay, that's the one to get.
With a preface by Richard Muller as well.
That's correct.
This volume is not for the faint and hard, but it is an encyclopedic type of title which you want to have on your shelf even as a layperson, so that when you come across a thorny issue, sanctification, perseverance, glorification, you can pull that off your shelf and it's nicely and neatly categorized. You can look in the table of contents, find the issue you want to study, turn to those pages, and he gives you biblical citations and everything. It's just a very helpful one-volume systematic,
right,
even for a layperson.
And it's the kind of thing where, as you said, you hint at, Jim, it's not the kind of book you would necessarily sit down and read cover to cover.
No, it's a resource.
Unless you're an oddball like me. Otherwise, you're going to read it as you have need to deal with a particular topic.
If you're more beyond a layperson, if you are seeking ministry, going at the seminary, it's the type of book you do want to sit down, take a couple of months, a little bit at a time, and read through it cover to cover.
Well, if I remember correctly, Jim, in the Presbytery of New Jersey, they require us to recite it verbatim. No, not quite.
Only in New Jersey.
going back, Calvin's Institutes of the Christian Religion.
Of course.
That definitely you want to have on your shelf.
I would like to mention something very, that was a big impact in my life, is Lorraine Bettner's The Reformed Doctrine of Predestination.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hadn't had much exposure to a systematic representation of Calvinism, and coming to that a number of years ago, a friend of mine placed Bettner's book in my hands, and that really changed my outlook. And the thing I most appreciate about that versus some other books on predestination is he he goes to great lengths at the end of each section to give you a number of scripture passages to look into. And I'm not saying the other books don't, but his were particularly useful for me.
He was very helpful. I heard stories of Lorraine Bettner coming to Westminster back in the 70s, and he would give a lecture, and he would give away his books free to the students who would attend his lectures.
And I would encourage all other lecturers to do just the same.
Okay.
Don't come empty-handed to Westminster, please.
Almost all those books by Bettner are useful. The one caveat would be his volume on Roman Catholicism predates Vatican II.
Okay.
So the volume that he wrote on Roman Catholicism.
Sure, and Catholicism had
into consideration the
developments in the 60s.
I think Vatican II occurred after the book was written.
Right.
So that's all I'm saying.
Sure.
I want to take that into consideration.
But, you know, we need to be reading old books, too, for that very
reason. I agree.
No, I'm not saying we don't.
Read that one. Make sure that you now, because you don't want to assume in dealing with Catholicism that you have the full picture just by reading that one book. That's all.
Of course.
Because there's, you know, Catholicism has a wide variety of perspectives. It's more like an umbrella, right?
Right.
A more up-to-date version that's similar to Calvin's Institutes is James Boyce's The Foundations of the Christian Faith.
Yes.
That's another big tome published by InterVarsity, but a really good volume. And that's an intermediate level, I think. If you're really wanting to get into it, an item that has been around for quite some years along with the institutes would be the Institutes of Eclectic Theology by Francis Turretin. That would be an advanced title. Turretin's institute served as the primary theology textbook at Old Princeton until it was replaced by Charles Hodges' three-volume set. And when Turretin was read at Old Princeton, it was in the original Latin, not in the English that we now have.
So the lesson here is don't buy the English version, get the Latin one.
Well, for you scholars, that would be true, but no, the English will do fine.
Yeah. And while we're talking about advanced titles, of course, I think, Jeff, you want to mention Moore's four-volume set?
You mean Bovink?
Bovink.
Moeller.
Yes.
Richard Muller.
Seeing as I mentioned Turretin, right? You want to, in terms of historical theology, if you're going to do any work on post-Reformation development, you really need to read Richard Muller's Post-Reformation Reformed Dogmatics, or a four-volume set.
Which is so helpful, not just for getting a historical picture of the post-Reformation period, but getting theology itself really secondhand, as it were, through Muller of really, in my opinion, the highlight, the high watermark point of theology that has been done in the history of the Reformed Church.
Right. What was I going to say? If you're going to say anything derogatory about Reformed Scholasticism, if you haven't read Muller, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, amen.
Really, I really mean that. Really, you need to read him and, of course, read the primary sources. I don't want to hear anything about the dry rationalism until you've actually read them or read Muller, who knows what he's talking about. That's okay. That's my preaching for today. Also, of course,
thank you for the rebuke.
What's that?
Thank you for the rebuke, brother.
Yeah. Hodges' Systematic Theology is still valuable.
You can get that really cheap at CBD.
Yeah, they've reprinted it. It's a three volumes. There is a one volume, I think PNR still has it, that Ed Gross edited. I think he removed the Latin quotations from. So, I mean, there is both the full three-volume and the single one-volume.
Sure.
Probably the one that I, you know, can't speak highly enough about is Herman Bavinck's Reformed Dogmatics.
The fourth one's coming out in March.
That's right, the fourth volume. There will be, as you know, if you've looked at the Baker website or seen their catalog, there's a companion volume that is not a part of the Reformed Dogmatics, but is also coming out about the same time on science and philosophy.
Sure.
Which is worth looking at, will be worth looking at.
So what
the Reformed Dogmatics is a phenomenal set. For years, it was only available in Dutch. I got mine for $27. It was a mint condition, but now it's available in English, and in many ways will be the standard go-to set because the English edition has such a wonderful footnotes, citations.
Oh, it's a great printing.
Right, where Bavinck would cite a book, you know, maybe in a shorthand form. Now all of the editors have done the dirty work, so to speak, of going and searching and tracking down those titles so that for those who want to do further research, they can read that. They can track the sources, which was harder to do with the Dutch original. So it's an interesting phenomenon that the English translation may be considered, if not already, at some point in the future, more authoritative because of that editorial work than the original Dutch.
Do we have any other elements of our encyclopedia we need to mention?
I'm sorry?
Do we have any other subjects? I mean, we hit up our systematics, our history, our biblical studies.
Oh, well, there's apologetics, of course.
Of course. How could I forget? For those who just buy the Library of Van Til and...
Hey, that's right.
So good, a good introductory there is...
I recommended a book that's out of print, but if you can get it, it's still good, called Classical Readings in Christian Apologetics.
Yeah.
That's a good survey of the history of the subject, and not a survey in the sense of a narrative alone, but actually it includes large extracts of, I would call, influential readings of apologists from the early church all the way up until the 80s when the book was originally published.
Like
a classic example of apologetics would be Augustine's City of God Against the Pagans. A phenomenal book, in my opinion. If you want to learn about the classical model of apologetics, the collected works of B.B. Warfield and his selected shorter writings are worth looking at. If you're wanting a history of philosophy from a Christian perspective, there's Gordon Clark's Thales to Dewey, which is a good read, and there's Dr. Van Til's Christianity and Conflict and his Christian Apologetics volume.
I also mentioned Bonson's volume, Van Til's Apologetic, which is where I started with Van Til.
Oh, yeah.
Which is extremely helpful.
Book, that's correct. The best book on an introduction, the helpful introduction to Van Til.
That's from PNR.
Gregory Bonson's Van Til's Apologetic. It's huge.
I would much rather have someone start there than somebody pick up Defense of the Faith, probably. The reason being is you're going to get large portions of Van Til's own writings plus explanations. And for someone brand new to Van Til, it's awful hard to understand.
Bonson has the benefit of being a very good explainer. Don't you think, Camden?
Of course, yeah.
He misses some things. But he's pretty thorough.
He's very true to Van Til's position too. Some differences with some of the current scholarship, but
there is. Dr. Bonson did write a helpful volume in terms of the biblical basis for Van Til's apologetic. Always Ready.
Yeah, that's really good.
That book.
Yep, that's good.
I think that's available both in hardback and paperback. And Scott Oliphant's book, The Battle Belongs to the Lord, is another, what I would call, helpful introduction to Dr. Van Til's method, which provides the biblical basis for that approach to apologetics, which we commonly know as presuppositionalism.
Mm-hmm.
I would add in as well a history of apologetics by Avery Dulles. I've not read the volume. He is a Roman Catholic Jesuit, but he does, I understand, has written a very helpful volume and given a history of apologetics, particularly in the early church. In addition, in terms of the biblical basis for Van Til's apologetic, William Dennison's book, Paul's Two-Age Construction and Christian Apologetics, that is an absolute must-read. If you're questioning whether or not Van Til's apologetic is biblical, and before you criticize Van Til for not having an exegetical underlying for his apologetic approach, and then you're tempted to dismiss it, you have to buy and read or get out of the library or pillage and steal it. I don't care what you got to do. William Dennison's book, Paul's Two-Age Construction.
And that's not a big book. I mean, that's a fairly reasonable. Answer. Yeah. Very helpful in terms of showing the biblical basis for what we call the antithesis. Worth getting. In terms of a two books that provide an overview of the different approaches to apologetics, probably Stephen Cowan's little book, 5 Views of Apologetics, and Boa and Bowman's Faith Has Its Reasons are useful. Not perfect, but useful. And keep that in mind. Now, finally, any other observation before we move to practical theology?
No.
Everything we've done up to this point, of course, is highly impractical. So now we're moving to practical. Maybe the term should be pastoral theology. Oh, well, of course, everything we've talked about up to this point is highly in pastoral or not pastoral, right?
If you want to be a real pastor, don't read that systematic theology, right. Junk. Well,
really, we kind of define negatively practical theology. It's almost like what doesn't fit into the other categories directly.
Anyway, seriously, I would suggest starting with Augustine's Confessions if you're looking for a good read.
Oh, yeah.
A very helpful volume. And then John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress, a standard book which at one time in the U.S. and in Great Britain was the most read book apart from the Bible.
It's, I think, the bestseller apart from the Bible.
There is, in terms of missions, Jonathan Edwards' book, a biography of David Brainerd. It's not a biography, really. Jonathan Edwards edited the journals of David Brainerd, who was a missionary to Native Americans in the pre-Revolutionary War America. In fact, in this region, he did his work, in the eastern Pennsylvania, Delaware Water Gap region of the Northeast. And he, that biography or edited journal apparently was God used to initiate the modern missionary movement in America and indeed throughout the world, I understand. Some may find the Religious Affections by Edwards helpful. It's a useful volume. It verges on navel-gazing, in my opinion, but it may be of some value. Charles Hodges' Way of Life.
Excellent, still
in print. That, at one time, was his best-selling book. Did you know that? Most popular book. And many people nowadays don't even know of it, right?
That's right. B.B. Warfield's Faith and Life, too.
That's right. Another... and maybe we should make a comment about this. The best Reformed theologians have understood the need to write in several different formats, or what we call genres. What happens, though, is a given writer's writing may not all get the continuous publication. In other words, we may remember Charles Hodge for his 3-volume Systematic Theology and forget that he wrote Way of Life. Someone else may be better known as a devotional writer when he was also could write rigorous academic theology. Some of it's an act, the accidents of history or providence, in that a writer's the writings that persist or that endure may not represent everything that a given writer produced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful to remember that someone like B.B. Warfield, who didn't live all that long ago, produced both rigorous academic theology and more popular or devotional literature as well.
That's right.
And they weren't a good writer and a good theologian. Those two are not divorced, right?
I would, and I agree. I echo those sentiments. In addition to some of the things we've mentioned, there's a small volume that I would recommend for both lay people and men seeking the ministry, and that's Edmund Clowney's book, Biblical Theology and Preaching, or is it Preaching and Biblical Theology?
Either way, it's a good book.
Either way, it's a good book. The reason why I say for a lay person is because if you read this book, it will help you to discern what you ought to be hearing in the sermons that you hear, Lord's Day in and Lord's Day out. I cannot recommend it enough. And another Edmund Clowney volume that's good as well is his book by published by IVP on the church. Very helpful, pastoral theology.
By the way, his many of his sermons are now available at the sermon. Is it Sermon Audio? Camden, do you know that website?
Yeah, I am familiar with it. I don't know if Clowney's on there.
If I remember correctly, there are 88 of his sermons now online. So
wow.
You can actually hear what he sounded like when he was preaching. Phenomenal. I listened to one the other day, God on Trial. It was a very good sermon.
Mm. I'll be sure to link to that.
He's as good in hearing as he was reading, I should say. In terms of a couple more titles,
yeah, we need to start wrapping this up.
In the more practical vein, and of course these wouldn't be practical to some people, but they are to me. J.I. Packer's Knowing God and Keep in Step with the Spirit. But Knowing God is a virtual classic, even though it's only 20-some years old, right? John Piper's Desiring God and a Hunger for God. And let's not forget Dr. Sproul's The Holiness of God and perhaps his Surprised by Suffering volume. Very helpful. Again, these are only suggestions. They're not the only books that I would mention, but they're a good start.
Yeah. If I could also add to that, I don't always agree with everything that Jay Adams says, but his book on counseling and pastoral theology are both one title is called Competent to Counsel, and the one on pastoral theology is escaping me right now, but it's very practical. He tells you things, if you're seeking the ministry, he tells you just some things that seem commonsensical, but pastors often forget, like simple things, like don't, when you're at the back door talking to somebody, don't jingle the change in your pocket, and real basic simple stuff like that I felt found helpful just in terms of presenting yourself well and not to turn away visitors too quickly, and there's some other deeper stuff in there, including exegesis on the underpinning theological exegetical underpinnings for pastoral ministry. So some of those volumes are published by Zondervan are helpful volumes.
Yeah, Jay Adams has the benefit of being in many ways, a nice bracing tonic in an age of a lot of pastoral theological fluff, if I may put
yes.
it that way. He tells it to you the way he sees it, and in many instances, it's just plain biblical.
Yeah.
Period.
I'd also like to mention that it's good for everyone to read outside of theology too. I don't mean at the expense of theology, but I've got a book in front of me that's really neat called The New Lifetime Reading Plan. And the subtitle is The Classic Guide to World Literature. And it's really helpful. Somebody fall on their mic there. But it's really helpful to broaden your horizons a bit and get a good education. The part one talks about the classics. And so, you know, you get into things like Sophocles, Euripides, Herodotus. Part two gets into books like Augustine's Confessions, the Quran, Dante, Machiavelli. Then we move on to more of philosophy and like Donne and poetry, Pascal.
Yeah, and read some of the classic novels.
Yeah, exactly. And getting into William Blake, Wordsworth, Samuel Taylor Coleridge. These are things to read. Even stuff like Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. Buying that might put you on some government list, but it's good to have. And I mean, to expose yourself to some of the major ideas and major thinkers in world history, it's important to supplement, and I mean that word specifically, supplement your theological reading with books and materials outside of
them. Theologians were never limited in their reading to theology. They read philosophy, they read literature, they read political stuff, history. They were well read, well rounded in their reading.
Yeah, that's important to be able to interact with those ideas, and so that we can bring the Word of God to our congregations.
Yeah, that's right. And the helpful thing I found too is reading general history, history of the Civil War, World War II, World War I, general history outside of church history. So, and why that's important is because the church history doesn't float on a cloud. History takes place in the context of God's general and providential leading and guiding and sustaining of all things. So it's helpful to know the context in which the history of the church took place.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're about out of time today. We'll have to get to in a future episode more of tips about what to look for in books, practically speaking, like different bindings. I'd even like to have James on and talk about storage, even unless that would bore people to tears. Probably not any more than reading a list of books that we've done today. But just to leave people with some parting thoughts, that it's just important to build a library, and most importantly is to buy good books.
And don't feel like you need to do it all at once.
No.
You're going to build it one book at a time.
But spread it out. Don't just only read history. Don't just only be a systematics person. But people of all levels in the church, whether you're a teenager or an informed lay person or a pastor or scholar, you should be exposing yourself to a variety of disciplines and interacting with the thoughts. Get a foundation in there. Build your own thought, your own system from well-respected and good people. But after that, make sure that you're interacting with people you disagree with. It's a way to sharpen your mind, a way to sharpen your thought, and to nuance some of your thinking. Because if we only read people we agree with all the time, we're really not going to have a firm foundation.
Right.
But, any other parting thoughts before we conclude today?
I think you said it.
Okay.
No, I think you said it. We did not cover, which may be another show, but particularly if you're going into ministry, pastor, how to build a commentary library.
Oh,
what you would use
we missed commentary.
Let's reserve that. We definitely need to talk about that.
We need to do that one. That's a serious oversight. Oops.
Yeah. Because that's a huge topic. One other thing. Sometimes buying a lot of books to some people might seem wasteful, but you got to understand, especially being a pastor, this might be the only library you have access to, and it's fine and it's good to buy books that you might not read for years. Because if it's a good book and it's on your shelf, one day you might have a question from one of your congregants, or you might need to interact with some idea for a sermon you're developing. And if you're like my friend James was pastoring in Canada, and if you don't have a seminary library down the street, if you need something by, you know, in the next couple of days, that's the only option. And you're also going to have a lot of people from your congregation, hopefully, asking you to borrow some books. And if you've only got a few volumes, you don't really have a whole lot to let them use. And so it's not just a matter of building, storing up in your barns, you know, books, but it's a matter of being prepared and being ready to have what you're going to need.
Yeah, these are going to be your tools.
Yeah.
Every man has some, if he's a professional contractor, he has a whole garage worth of tools. If he's
a garage worth of books, right, yeah. Jeff.
Oh yeah.
If he is if somebody like me who can't, screw in a light bulb without a set of directions, well, even I have some tools.
And
I've
seen that. He needs a tool.
Yeah. And what's helpful to have is these books. You see them not as this heady, high in the sky, head in the sky type of thing where you're just got your face in the book and there's no practical value to them. They are your tools, and they are the means that you are going to use to edify the Church of God, to preach the word, to counsel one another, to encourage others in the faith. Your library ought to be seen as being your shop. Anybody who does any woodworking, they have a shop that includes saws and chisels and hammers, and it might include a vacuum system to get rid of all the dust. That's a shop. You build a shop. That's what your library is. It's your shop. It's the place where you're going to go to study God's word and to prepare meals for the people of God. Don't let people make fun of you and make you ashamed for collecting books, good books. It ought to be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening today, and I'd also like to thank our panel members. Thank you, Jim. We got Jim Cassidy again and Jeff Waddington. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate having you on.
Thank
absolutely.
You.
Yeah.
But I want to just mention that we'll be back next week discussing another topic. But until then, you can visit castlechurch.org to read the show notes and download today's bibliography. You can also find more information about our other programs and even subscribe to our podcast feeds in order to get this and other programs delivered automatically to your computer or your music player.
But
if you'd like, yeah, exactly. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can send your questions or comments to christthecenter@castlechurch.org, or you can call us at 215-392-0946 in order to leave a voicemail. So this is Camden Busey again, and we look forward to having you back next time on Christ the Center.